This is CliffCentral.com.
So increasingly, humanity finds itself drowning in information. We are choking in a deluge of data. We are increasingly suffering from bandwidth anxiety between our Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds and Facebook feeds. Most people talk about the fact that now we live in the attention economy. Attention is the new limited resource. Attention is the new oil. If you don't have ADD today, you're not paying attention. This is the question on everybody's minds. How do we curate what we pay attention to? How do we push aside the noise and focus on what's important? Stuart Brand used to say, science is the only news. The rest is the same he says and she says that you see in the media. And so, if I were to be talking to entrepreneurs, if I was talking to heads of companies, I would tell them, pay attention to exponentials. Pay attention to disruptive technologies. Pay attention to the progress in artificial intelligence, biotechnology, nanotechnology, right? The big three, GNR, genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. These are the forces that are upending the world. These are the new trillion-dollar industries that are going to emerge out of no place. Think exponentially, pay attention to disruptive technology.
Welcome back, everybody. We're at the Singularity University Summit, and we're incredibly excited. I must admit, I missed out most of yesterday, so I'm really amped to be back.
Yeah.
And most importantly, I've got my two favorite Bretts with me.
Hey, Brett.
Hi, Brett.
So the first Brett is Brett Lindsay. The second Brett is Brett Lopesha. Brett Lopesha, how the hell have you found the show, pal?
It's been great. You know, the Singularity University is something I've wanted to go to for a couple of years now, but I think it takes quite a serious amount of resources to get to the US version.
And you're talking
of
moolahs, right?
Yeah, it's big money.
It's big money.
So
right?
I'm very, very happy that they've actually started bringing out chapters into other countries. Mm. And the second I found out that they had one coming to SA, I was on the list. And it's been great. It's been really, really spectacular.
I mean, every time I see Shane Mann, I'm giving him a hug.
Thank you.
I love you, bud. I love you. This is the best thing ever.
And we're going to be talking to him as our last guest.
Oh, just so
to
I've wrap done a big up schlup here, haven't
no,
I?
That's good. So, thanks, Shane. But yeah, he's going to come through. But honestly, Mr. Lopesha, what have you thought of Singularity Summit? I mean, now that we're here and we're seeing all these great people talking about amazing stuff, what are your thoughts?
Look, I mean, as you guys may recall, I'm a little obsessed over these things. So I wasn't sure if I was going to find too much new information. Honestly, there has been some overlap, but for the most part, the speakers have been fabulous. I was blown away by the AI and machine learning talk yesterday morning.
What were some of the highlights of that? Because I wasn't here, right? I'm totally jealous right
to
now.
To me, the thing that stood out most of all, which I find to be possibly the most important highlight, is how much we don't know what we don't know. Because the outputs that they are getting from the data that they are mining is astonishing. The one story that stood out to me most of all is just by listening in to conversations happening between students in a particular class, they're able to tell within one day which ones will fail and which ones will pass the course that they're doing.
Oh, Matthew St. Clair, you're in trouble, pal.
Within a week, they can pinpoint which questions they will fail at in the tests.
Wow.
3 years.
OMG. I needed that when I was at school.
Incredible.
I wouldn't
absolutely
have had to
incredible
do school.
Well, that begs the question, what's the point of school?
Well, this is the question she actually asked. Yeah. This is Dr. Vivian Ming.
Yeah.
She was actually on the show earlier, right?
Fabulous. I mean, I thought she was absolutely wonderful. And this was the point she was making, is are exams even necessary anymore? If we have the tools to do this, where we can tell in a short amount of time how productive you can be, how well you will be doing at a particular job, then what's the point of doing all of this studying? Especially as the information load increases and our jobs are changing more dynamically as we go forward, it just makes sense to move to a world like that.
I guess it's all about critical thinking. Corin Wallstra also spoke a lot about that on a previous series of ours, Future of Education. And it is, you know, rethink how we do education and let's focus on the critical thinking and problem-solving side of things.
No, exactly. I mean, we had Cesar Incasana Nkasana?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, that sounds good.
Nkasana?
Oh, about education.
Ex-banking and moved into education. And not only talking about access to information, but talking about how the types of things that children need to be learning today is what they need in order to empower them for the future. And we're not doing that because we're still stuck in this foundational, this fundamental way of teaching. And something's going to change. And it's great because these discussions start saying, well, what is that way of teaching?
Yeah. And this is the first insight I've actually seen into that, which has given me hope for that. I mean, I've got, I have many children. I've got 5 kids. And trying to figure out how to
actually... I forgot about that.
Yeah. Okay. Most people laugh and point when I'm
commiserating. Sorry. Am I doing it again?
You love all of them equally.
I do, of course. Yes. They're amazing.
Yeah.
They are amazing. But I don't really know what to do about their long-term education. Mm-hmm. It's a big concern, right? And yesterday I got a bit of insight that gave me hope.
What is the age gap between your oldest and youngest?
My eldest is 15, and the youngest is the 2-year-old twins.
So, wow. So in that decade gap,
right,
they're going to have different education between them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing, I mean, we've brought it up on the show before, is education is a great thing and AI and all these things that are happening, but what does the future look like for our children? How do we as parents raise our children for a future that we are uncertain of?
This is the real challenge. Yeah. And I mean, because, you know, everybody has this idea where they say, you know, we're learning how to do jobs that won't exist by the time we're ready for the workforce. This becomes a bigger and bigger problem the further forward we go into the future because of the fundamental themes of this conference, which is exponential change across the board. All fields of technology, anything that becomes an information-driven or information-led technology is going to be prone to this. So finding ways to figure out what your child is going to actually excel at and love doing without having to go through that pain, mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So I must admit, what Singularity University has done a really great job here about is actually giving us the tools to go and play with, right? So we're hearing about these tools, and then there's all these kind of, I want to call them PlayStations everywhere. Have you tried any of them out? Like the controlling robotic spiders with your mind, that kind of stuff. Did you give any of them a go?
I haven't done that, but I've played a lot with the VR stuff.
Mm.
I know it's had a little bit of a bumpy start from a consumer perspective, but I absolutely believe that's the future. And then the stuff I enjoyed playing with upstairs in the little showcase area is these basically entertainment-based robots at the moment. And I think that is going to be a hugely explosive
industry. So tell us a bit about those.
So there's this one little character, which is actually a desktop robot called Anki.
Yeah.
And it's one of the creators at Pixar was actually involved in the development of this robot. So it's pretty spectacular how much personality they've managed to build into it. And you can play games against it. It picks up little cubes. It runs around on the desk. It makes cute noises. It pulls little funny faces at you. And then you can play sort of memory games with it and so on.
Oh, very cool.
Mind-blowing. And,
very cool.
$250-$300.
Wow. So I really hope you bought some for your 2 twins, right?
Don't get them here. I have to get them online.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Luckily for you, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, I have to admit, Diva Chanda had some interesting views around how you control devices and how you're able to control these robotic uniforms using your mind.
Mm. I think it's a pretty interesting field that's just popped up quite recently. You know, the thing that comes to mind is the new company that Elon Musk has founded, Neuralink, and this is all about brain-machine interface. So I think the long-term view for that company is to be able to provide some kind of interface between our brains and machines, and the value proposition or the way that it's been positioned by Elon Musk is to say that we are way outclassed from a bandwidth perspective when it comes to our interface with machines, because currently our interface is kind of our fingers.
It's sort of very analog, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And moving to our voices, but it needs to get better, otherwise we won't be able to keep up. So I think the first stages of this, pretty exciting and interesting.
Yeah.
Probably mostly focused on fixing brain kinds of diseases and problems at the outset, but then later moving into very, very interesting consumer spaces, I think. Controlling drones with our minds and such.
Excellent.
I mean, it gets quite difficult for Singularity University to kind of keep up with this kind of content and keep guys like you entertained, right? And at the forefront of your own industry. I mean, do you see them, like, you know, what needs to be done next, I guess?
I think it's difficult when you are speaking to a wide audience, because if there's a base of knowledge, then you can actually start getting into these subjects with a little more depth. But this is a problem that will accelerate, right? I think going forward, the rate of change accelerates. So it's going to become
exponential growth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's going to become harder and harder to keep this.
Of the show, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Exponentialism, that's my word.
Exponentialism?
I don't know if it's real.
Yeah.
You can own it.
The price competitiveness of exponential costs dropping, and yes, things don't need to get better in order to get exponential growth.
Yeah.
They just need to get cheaper.
Exactly.
And that's wild. But Singularity U, it's wonderful to see you here, Mr. Brett Loebscher.
It's good to see you guys again.
Attending the summit. Thanks for joining us today on the show. And we look forward to having you back on the show as well. You're not too far away like some of the other speakers that are here. It's just great to have access to minds like you.
Cool.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks to you guys.
So we're still at the Singularity U Summit in Johannesburg, and we're having a fantastic time speaking to all of the speakers that are on the main stage.
It's been fabulous, right?
It is. I'm really enjoying it. I'm like a kid in a candy store listening to all of the great minds just giving us this amazing information. And we have one of the guest speakers here today, Mr. Carlo van der Veer. Did I say that right?
That's very close. Thank you.
Okay.
From
the Singularity University in Netherlands.
Yes, actually, yes. Yeah. I'm also linked to the Singularity University executive programs in Silicon Valley. But
yep.
Within Singularity, I'm responsible for everything that happens in mobility. And mobility is a typical industry that's being disrupted because digitization is happening there all the way at the moment.
Excellent.
So when you talk mobility, just to make it clear for our audiences, you are talking about access, or is it mobility as in getting around?
It's mobility as in getting around. The biological urge of people to really change their location, which is something that actually happened already for tens of thousands of years with a remarkable constant. We always have been moving ourselves around for a little bit more than 1 hour per day. That's when we're most happy. So that's something, that's biology that happens somewhere in evolution. It's not going to change.
So literally the physical moving around it's part of our genealogy, right?
Exactly, and it's also in the dependent on the richness of a country. So even poor countries do an hour, and rich countries do an hour. The rich countries move a little bit further with that, and that's the only thing that changed in the last thousands of years is the range that we have. So it used to be 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers that we did in this one hour, and nowadays it's almost 100 kilometers, and that's also exponentially changing at this moment.
Kilometers
in Western Europe, the average is 100 kilometers, 50 of which is flying. It's not that we fly 50 kilometers every day, but you just have one intercontinental flight per year, and you already have 50 per day. But apart from that, it's 50 kilometers more or less what people in average commute or leisure, etc.
Do you have a sense on how many kilometers you're doing? I bet you must travel quite a bit.
I'm a little bit topping that, yeah. So I'm not living to my, as it's called, the Marchetti's constant. It's my evolutionary drive. I'm a little bit over that, yeah. But
And what are you seeing the impacts of this 1 hour of mobility in a person's life? What are the impacts on the person and society?
Yeah, that's a good question, because if you see this, the fact that this range has increased is good for the economy, and because you can meet more people, you can choose more jobs. So if I had to choose my job within 1 kilometer, I'll be a farmer, which would not be an economical sensible thing, because I don't think I'm good at farming.
And you probably don't have to these days, right?
it's automated. Yeah, that's true. So you have to travel a little bit further in order to get a job. That's economical, but sensible. But above 100 kilometers is not really sensible. So we should come to use all this technology, not so much to go even further and further, but try to improve the mobility, because at this moment mobility is not a sustainable system. There's 1.2 million people dying because of accidents related to mobility.
Oh, wow.
We have the pollution thing. We have of course the global warming, although that's not a problem anymore since we have a new president of the United States apparently.
But we have all these
factors, and like also congestion is of course and the use of public space,
time waste,
and if you make that financially, it costs an economy like South African economy about 5%.
Wow.
So the economy in South Africa, if there would be no accidents, no congestion, no negative effects of mobility, the economy would run 5% better. That's billions.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, we saw it with our blackouts. We had blackouts about 4 or 5 years ago.
Load shedding,
they called it. It was full-on blackouts for half a day or a day, or even sometimes a couple of days. The impact on traffic, on getting to work, and people stuck in jams for 3, 4, 5 hours. So I totally understand.
It's costly, but the most costly is accidents, actually. Youngsters that die in a car accident, that's
the lost human potential.
The lost human potential, apart from, of course, the societal damage that you do there and the emotional damage. But it's also a financial. So it pays off in order to invest in that. And if you see what technology at this moment can do, and especially the exponential technology that is entering in the mobility world at this moment, it's really cutting down on these costs.
Do you look at the difference between commercial mobility as well as the sort of holiday travel that's hedonistic view and the productivity behind both? And I'm going to another question, but do you look at both of those?
Yes, exactly. Because this is 1 hour than an average show mobile. It's distributed among commuting and commercial traveling, and the other end leisure. There's a shift towards leisure.
Yes.
You see, also in a lot of countries where the peaks were during the working days, you see this shifting to the weekends even. Mm. In the Netherlands, we have more traffic jams on the Saturday than on a Friday.
Wow.
So that's something that you also see. So this hour is not going to change, but we really can do more sensible stuff with this hour.
That's fantastic. And we're in a connected world. Is there a need to be as mobile as we have been? I know you mentioned this, that hour of travel is good, but we're connected. We can work from home. We can work from anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. This is actually one of the reasons that this hour is not going to change, but we use it for different stuff. We can do much more sensible thing within this hour.
Yes.
And on the other hand, the vehicles get better, cheaper, safer. They do parts of the travel autonomous, which is a comfort thing because it takes the nasty bits out of driving. So driving even gets better. All the system, the services like what you see for Uber and all these kind of services, they really provide a better service than it ever been before. So it's improving, it's getting cheaper, it's getting better, it's getting more fun.
So I guess we're going to throw it forward just slightly. You talk about the exponential technologies in the mobility space. Can you give our audience a sense of that? Are we talking purely autonomous cars, or are we talking Hyperloop? Where are those kind of technology points?
I think Hyperloop is not going to happen. Sorry for these guys, but especially these students that work on that, they're going to find out some interesting stuff, but we are not waiting for point-to-point transport. This is typically making transport faster with no real societal or economical benefits behind
That's
it.
True, so, actually.
Sorry to say that. Yeah. Apart from it being very, very extremely dangerous system, if you look on YouTube, Hyperloop busted, you're cured for that. But on the other hand...
when a vacuum stops working, it really does make
That's
a big
when they, or when there's a small hole in this tube, you get a pressure bumper that kills everyone inside. So it's something. It's a very, very challenging solution, looking for a problem actually. Autonomous driving is coming, especially for comfort reasons. That every now and then it will take over. Also, when you are about to make a crash, car can take over in this rare moment. So it makes cars inherently safe. It doesn't mean that the driver is going to disappear, because that's an extra step with a lot of problems on that, and also not what people are waiting for. But the car is going to take over in a lot of times, and it makes it better and safer.
There's a lot of talk around leapfrogging technologies, especially in Africa, and things like infrastructure not being available for things like maybe autonomous cars or connected things, but the world full of drones taking people around?
Yeah, the lack of roads is an advantage if you want to peek in drones. This is a leapfrog thing, but there are many other leapfrog things, like we in the West, there's a lot invested in making clever roads with all kind of signs and dynamic route information panels, etc. Smart cars don't need that. A car is going to be inherently safe, independent from what infrastructure it drives upon. It doesn't need a real clever infrastructure. That's a good thing. So smart mobility is smart cars on stupid infrastructure. So these flat roads, as you see them here actually, with not a lot of technology around it, that's the ideal roads for future technology. This is a huge leapfrog, and it's just one of many, many examples where I think that Africa can leapfrog on the future of mobility. You're going to pass us.
Excellent.
So I'm incredibly excited to be living in Africa at the moment, as we do get that opportunity to leapfrog. So I'd like to thank Carlo van der Veer. Is that right?
Thank you. That's very right.
Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor to have you on our
show.
Thank
you. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you very much.
Enjoy the Singularity U Summit.
I am doing that.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Again, my mind has been blown. It's been put back together. I thought you were joking when you were saying that, Brett. I mean, that's
true story, isn't it?
It didn't feel like it could break more times if I tried.
No, and I had to full defrag overnight from day one, and now we're back into day two, and we have one of our guests from day one,
Adriana Moray. An absolute superstar, right? A local South African who's going to take us to Mars, hopefully, not just go by yourself.
locally out of this world guest.
Out of this world. Adriana, how are you doing?
Thanks, Brett, and Brett, for having me, having me here today. I'm doing well, yes. I won't elaborate more on the defragmentation and putting back together of the brain. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience to be here, I think. And as a researcher, I've tried to keep abreast of the possibilities. But I think what I've been most impressed with here is people doing these possibilities, people implementing these dreams, and also the unity of purpose that somehow has been highlighted here, I think, from all corners of the world, different research approaches, different startup areas of activity, and this unity, you know, that we see emerging from all of the different speakers and the different topics discussed.
So now tell me, why on earth would you want to go to Mars?
Why on earth would you not want to go to Mars? So the way I see it, I mean, life has been evolving on planet Earth for around 4 billion years, according to the fossils that we've extracted and examined. And it's only right now, at this precise moment, in the last sort of few decades, that we've developed the capability. Of course, we've always dreamed of traveling to other worlds, but recently the technology is almost there in terms of being able to get to planet Mars, our next-door neighbor planet, and the one that makes most sense to explore
and
first.
It's close, hey?
Yeah, just next door, so 200 million kilometers or so.
200 million kilometers.
Okay. I mean, I saw in your presentation, it didn't look maybe longer than a ruler.
So my presentation yesterday was 10 minutes, which strangely enough is the time it takes light to travel between the two planets.
No way. So
that's awesome.
I forgot to mention that, given that I only had 10 minutes.
Kaboom.
That would have been a great mic drop. That's excellent. I mean, I've never interviewed or met someone that is possibly going to be leaving the planet voluntarily. And it does break my brain in a very different way.
Wanting Mike too.
To my Mike, yeah, Mike Cowan, if you want to tag along, then if you've got space in your hand luggage, you'll send our co-host with you as well.
Yes.
He's not here to defend himself.
We just take advantage.
But how does one go about becoming a Mars One candidate? Mm. And when you get there, what will you do?
So I heard about the Mars One project in early 2013. So it's been almost 5 years of being involved in the project. And we've had several rounds of eliminations, let's say, from the 200,000 who applied initially. And we're now sitting at 100 of us in the semi-final round, because we'll still have another selection or two selection processes that take us down to the 24.
Wow.
That will then be offered full-time jobs with the Mars One project to train for around a decade. It's pitched at a decade because this was kind of the scale in which the moon mission was planned. So envisaged and implemented kind of eight years or so later. So that's the time required for the tech, but importantly is of course the training of the crew. Mm. But perhaps the most important would be the cohesion that you would hope to have emerging from these teams that train together for these many years.
Because just go home.
Yes, and we've heard it from Dr. Dan Barry that the trust that's required between the team members is probably the most crucial part of achieving the success of a space exploration mission.
Excellent. And then you're a part of a team. What are you going to be doing on Mars?
So I think what unifies us 100, if I could narrow it down, is first of all our perseverance of having stuck with the project.
Yeah.
In spite of the stuff you'll read online, calling it a hoax, a scam, a joke, etc.
Really?
While many people are excited by it, of course you have to then explain to your boss or your family that you volunteered for this trip. So it takes a certain amount of perseverance. I'd say that's the first clause that you would need to meet. But secondly, I think it's the skills that we have and the vision that we have for our professional careers. So largely amongst the 100, although it was not a requirement by Mars One, are professionals in data science, software engineers, all sorts of engineers, mechanical, electronical, aero, etc. Research scientists from geology to quantum physics, in my case, people who see a continuation of their professional activities on Mars. So this is, of course, not for everybody's cup of tea, let's say, but for us explorers, researchers, software developers, etc., this really makes sense, because this would really be the next frontier where we'd be able to extend our capabilities as a species and as individuals.
I guess quantum physics must be really important to have on this trip, because
you find yourself
the exponentialism
on a good
niche.
In theory, I can do anything.
Right? Are you a good
cook? I'm a theoretical physicist.
Terrible.
But in theory, I can describe the molecules.
So we're all going to go hungry on Mars if you don't. But at least we can talk about it, which is great. Yeah, we just need
this is the first time I've seen the philosopher just blown.
It is.
Are we able to put your mind back together?
No, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a little while. It really is. But I think it's just the caliber of the people that we've had at Singularity University. It's nice. I mean, we've got people going to Mars. We've got people that have been to space. And we've got people that are literally talking about how to extract water from the deep permafrost within the planet. And it's like, this is all in one place. And yet it's all got a very focused vision on the future. And that's truly important, I think. How do you feel about the future coming from some place like this and being a part of what you're at?
Yeah, I think here we've focused on positivity, but I think there are several rather pressing challenges that we need to think about. And of course, the discussions here are in some way focusing on solving these grand challenges. So for me, and I know sort of real astronauts would disagree with me when I say the technology's there to get to Mars. Again, I'm a theorist, so I'm like, we don't need a quantum computer
Give
to get to Mars.
Let's go.
We don't need a fusion reactor. You know, we've got the technology that we need, plus minus 10 years, $20 billion, teams of hundreds of people to make this happen.
Give or take $1 billion.
Or give or take 10
or 10
billion.
Or a zero or two. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it depends how many failures you suffer. There's a lot of unpredictable elements of doing space exploration, of course. But $20 billion is not an inconceivable amount. We've heard, you know, many allusions to this amount of money in terms of government inputs and lesser glamour, less glorious, lesser activities than going to Mars. So I think the money is one thing. The sort of decade you'll need to actually test and develop all this stuff is another thing, and the hundreds of thousands of people that would contribute to it. This all exists, you know, and that's what I mean by existing. Yeah. We don't need a revolution in science to achieve this goal. What I find is a complex problem that we don't have a solution to. We need several revolutions from politics all the way through to science in terms of solving sustainability and not just survival, but creating a future of which we can be proud here on Earth. Mm-hmm. This, in my mind, is a tough challenge and a currently unsolved challenge.
You threw in politics there. I mean, just the difference of people willing to change and the different cultures. I mean, that's probably more unsurmountable than the technology itself.
I all of a sudden see why you would want to leave the planet as soon as you bring politics into it.
That's right. I mean, it's crazy. So I guess, I mean, I know where Brett's heading with this. The way you ended your show kind of rang some serious truths.
Oh, yeah.
Can you share that with us?
Yeah, so I mean, I think if we want to break it down to basics, why do we want to create a sustainable future for ourselves? 99.9% of species that have ever existed, in other words, all species eventually have and will go extinct. Why is that? That's because the environment changes at a rate that the species is unable to adapt to. So we would become one of these species and go extinct eventually if the natural order of things progressed. However, we're in a unique position now where we are aware of this, the fact that I'm talking to you about it right now shows a level of awareness that the multitude of bacterial organisms that went extinct and
have no the capability. Idea, right?
Well, also, we think.
They did.
Maybe they also left the planet on very small ships.
That's completely because possible. I have an open mind.
Because the ships were smaller, they cost less to send.
When you've only got one cell, you're a fairly easy thing to transport.
A great big catapult in the sky.
But I think it's interesting to look back sort of 2 billion years ago when the biggest extinction or one of the biggest extinction events Earth has ever experienced happened, and that was as a result of cyanobacteria having the emerging capability to split water and use H2O as their source of energy in terms of and then oxygen was produced.
Yeah.
So oxygenation of the atmosphere occurred, and that resulted in the capability of multicellular life to have evolved because of the extra access to energy. So oxygen has many highly reactive species, which allowed the development of complex life, but also because of its reactive and energetic nature caused the extinction, one of the biggest extinction events ever. So to what extent are we implementing a similar development and capability in terms of our input and contribution to the climate change that we're experiencing now? I think the difference there is that we're aware of it. We're aware of it. So back to your question about why would we want to create a sustainable future? What's my point here? And I think we have to break it down and say, why do we want to be one of the species that doesn't go extinct according to the natural course?
Yeah.
Are we worth saving?
That's a good question.
Let's assume we say yes, then we would say why.
And who? Not Trump.
I won't go further on that. Don't get me started. But I think our capacity to create knowledge is our unique contribution as a species that hasn't occurred before. That's unprecedented. So we're able to create knowledge. We've created the internet. We've created a global communications network. We have libraries. We have books. We have information. We have this knowledge that we've created. That's what we do. So let's say we're proud of enough of that we want to perpetuate our species into the future. That's the assumption then, that we should be proud of what we do, and it's with the spirit of pride that we should be going forward trying to create a sustainable future for ourselves. Mm. Because if we're simply trying to survive, then we haven't really been any different to the bacteria that
That's incredible.
But I like bacteria, of course. I love photosynthesis.
I especially like bacteria, and I'd build astronaut bacteria.
Yes. Oh, that is very important bacteria. But I must apologize, because through all of that amazing knowledge transfer that you've tried to give us, you've had to stare at two very awed faces. Because
we are. I feel
it is
like
incredible that people like you are not only from South Africa, but are on this planet and have such a care for the future that you actually get involved in doing something about it. And I think for me, that's possibly some of the most motivating and inspiring things, is that at Singularity U, we get to meet a handful of these amazing individuals that are doing such great things in their fields that have such a profound impact on what we can all have as society. And yet, if we could just multiply that, I think as a humanity, the sustainable future would come from this global forwardness.
And I think what's really crucial is this network realization. So there's no such thing as a single living organism. So as much as you would like to think that you have this individual approach to survive and sustain your ideas,
only child syndrome.
There's no such thing. Your mother and father were still necessary for your introduction to this world. The more than half of your cells are bacterial in your body that keep you alive. Yeah. The oxygen you breathe is created by cyanobacteria and other photosynthetic organisms that emerge subsequently. The food you eat, you know, everything about life is a network. There's no such thing as a single living organism. And the quicker we realize that, and the quicker we realize that the impact of each and every decision we have should improve the greater good, it should contribute to the greater good, the sooner we can sustain ourselves.
Another advantage of you being on Mars One will be that it doesn't sound like you sleep, because I wouldn't be able to sleep thinking about all of that stuff.
Oh, no, it would keep me up all night, right?
No, because
I write sticky notes when I have ideas. I'd hate to know what my world would look like if I was thinking like you.
But we'd love to chat to you some more. And we'd love to have you back on the Futurology show, maybe for a show just dedicated to the allure of the unknown and the smaller things that nobody ever gives any thought to. But thank you for the time you've given us today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for your input at Singularity, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Superb. Thank you.
Again, they've got a great repository of some highlights from Singularity on the website. Yes. So Singularity Summit, Singularity U Summit, South Africa Summit. Website?
Yep, .org. Singularity.
Do you want to just say that again?
Let me say that again for all you people who were actually trying to pay attention. SingularityU, South Africa Summit.org.
There we go.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Long URLs and ad handles. I can rock this. Impressed.
So, don't you love the way Singularity kind of pulls all the content together, right?
Yes.
They start talking about all the big ideas and problems that they need to solve. Yeah. And they don't just leave you hanging, you know, a whole. Tantalized. Have I got that right? No,
that's tantalized?
Tantalized. Not tanda.
Tentacalized.
Tentacalized.
You're right. So,
Brett. But so
and then they really kind of narrow down on how you actually do it.
Yeah,
they don't
just
kind of assume you got to go figure this out for yourself.
Absolutely.
They get the experts in who tell you how to do it. Guys,
amazing.
Absolutely. Boom.
The sentence of Singularity Summit is: Singularity University empowers a global community with a mindset, skill set, and network to create an abundant future. And that's wild. The fact that they're not just sharing these things for the sake of sharing them. They're actually empowering people with this knowledge to say, now do something.
And I think, guys, on that note, it's hashtag futureproof Africa, right?
Futureproof Africa, absolutely.
Futureproof Africa.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.